G'day everyone, this is B. Jermaine, aka The Terrible Australian, and welcome to the fifth edition of my 2019 Melbourne International Film Festival audio reviews. I should state off right off the bat that I am suffering from a little bit of a head cold at the moment, and so if I do tend to ramble a little bit in this installment, I apologize sincerely. I'll try to get through these reviews as quickly as possible, and that hopefully they'll make sense as well. So, but for this installment, I will be reviewing the films Brittany Runs a Marathon, Coco D, Coco Da, The Lodge, and Swallows. So let's get right to it. And first up, of course, is the comedy Brittany Runs a Marathon. And the plot summary for this film, which I am reading off the MIFF program guide, is as follows. Chronic underachiever Brittany Folger, Gillian Bell, is a bit of a hot mess. 27 years old, clubbing every night and barely scraping by on a minimum wage in Manhattan, looking to score an Adderall prescription out of a doctor she found on Yelp, Brittany is instead faced with some hard truths about her lifestyle. Determined to change her ways, but too broke to join a gym, she starts running, one city block at a time, and soon she sets her sights on the New York Marathon. Now, for me, personally, one of the most underrated comedic talents that are out there in the world right now is Gillian Bell. I first became acquainted to her in her supporting role in the film The Night Before. I wasn't really a fan of that film, but for me, her character, because she in that film played the wife of Seth Rogen's character, she was like the standout of the whole film. And she caught my eye very quickly, and I thought, you know, I've never heard of Gillian Bell before, but I feel like she's got a quality about her that, give it another few years' time, I think she's definitely going to go on to bigger and better things. And after that movie came out, she started a whole bunch of other films, including playing a role in 22 Jump Street as well, which really showed off her talents as both a comedian and as an actress. So what makes Brittany Runs a Marathon really interesting is that this is her first major lead role. And I have to say, this is a great vehicle for her. I really enjoyed the hell out of this film. For me, Brittany Runs a Marathon was, up to this point in the festival, that I'd seen a lot of very sort of dark and heavy films. So Brittany Runs a Marathon, when I sat down to watch it, was a bit of a fresh air for the festival, because it's such a really heartwarming, charming, and hilarious comedy that's a true crowd pleaser in every way. And for me, like, comedies in the last few years have been kind of hit and miss with me. But for me, Brittany Runs a Marathon just made me laugh so much. And I think it was all due to both the film's writer-director, Paul Downs Cazalzo. I most likely butchered his last name, so please forgive me. And of course, Gillian Bell, who is just absolutely wonderful in this film, and she just is terrific as Brittany. It's a performance that I think, in other hands, some people might see Brittany as kind of just an annoying, kind of millennial entitled character, but in Gillian Bell's hands, she makes her such a likable presence, and also we are taken in by a journey throughout the film. And she also, she plays the character like an underdog. And throughout the whole film, while she is trying to sort of get out of the sort of the rut that she is in her life and trying to do something bigger and better by sort of taking up running and then deciding to set her sights on the New York Marathon, we are with her every step of the way, and we are just on her side because she is such a likable character, and we just can't help but just fall in love with her. And this is definitely due to Bell's performance, who it's just such a really wonderful, charming performance as well. And also, she's backed by a great supporting cast that include Lil Rel Howery, Micah Stock, Michaela Watkins, Alice Lee, and so many more. And everyone is just really good in their roles. And also, she has a great sort of on-screen love interest in the form of Utkarsh Abubakar. I probably butchered his name, so please forgive me for that. And they have really good chemistry with each other. But what I really like, though, is that it's such a really fun entertaining film with so many likable performances and characters, and it has a great arc for her as well. And it's just a really wonderful little film that I think, if sort of promoted well, I think will be a big hit with audiences, because the audience I saw this film with just absolutely loved it. And it's a true crowd pleaser in every way. So, and this is definitely one film from the festival that I definitely recommend everyone to check out. Like, it is a funny, heartwarming film that has just a great star-making performance from Jillian Bell. So if I had to give Brittany Runs a Marathon a rating, I give it a solid 4 out of 5. I really enjoyed this film a lot. Now, moving on to film number 2, which of course is the Swedish horror film Coco D, Coco Da. And the plot summary for this film is as follows. Still grieving the loss of their 8-year-old daughter, married couple Tobias and Ellen set out on a camping trip in the forest, hoping to mend their fractured relationship and restore some peace of mind. Instead, they're taunted and murdered endlessly by three grotesque figures sprung to life from a childhood nightmare. A nursery rhyme chanting ringleader, a strong man carrying a dead pig, and a spooky angular girl with her vicious pet dog. Now, whenever I look through the MIFF program guide, or at least when it is released, the first section I always go to is the night shift section. Now, for those who don't know what the night shift section is, this is the section of the MIFF program where basically has all the sort of horror films, thrillers, and genre films are put together. And it's always the first section I always look, because, and apologies, sorry about that, where I look because being a big horror fan, I'm always on the lookout for horror films that I'm hoping that make that section in for the festival that year, or even introduce me to genre films I've never heard of before. And Coco D, Coco Da was definitely one of those films. And I read the synopsis and it immediately caught my interest. So I was sort of umming and ahhing whether to put it on my actual viewing list or not. And you know what? I decided, you know what the hell? I'll check it out anyway. And I always like putting films I've never heard of before on the list to watch. Now, having seen the film, I really do like it. but to be fair, it is an interesting film. Like, there are aspects about Coco D, Coco Da that I think are quite interesting, but I don't feel like the film ever really comes together as a whole, and which is a shame, really, because it definitely had a lot of potential. And the film's writer and director, Johannes Nyholm, I probably butchered his name, so please forgive me, definitely has a very interesting sort of take on this story and how he wanted to present it, because it basically has this kind of Groundhog Day kind of scenario where the couple at the center of it, Tobias and Ellen, who were sort of struggling with the death of their daughter, are in a situation where they keep being murdered over and over again. But the thing is, it's lapsed in time, so every time they both die, the day repeats itself again, and they try to figure out how they get out of that situation, particularly Tobias, who kind of is the first one to kind of notice all this at first. And, like, Nyholm definitely has some interesting thematic elements at the center of the film, but I don't feel like the plot really ever delves into them properly, because, I mean, this is a weird criticism to have for the film, but I'm going to say it anyway because I have a reason behind it, is that the film is very repetitive. And I know that's weird for a film that's basically about characters in a situation who keep dying over and over again, but I feel like how it's presented, though, it doesn't really offer anything on an intellectual or thematic level, for at least for a while, until the very end. And it just gets really old very fast. And it got to a point, though, where every time the scenes, like, the day would repeat, or at least their murder would repeat, the audience started laughing because they were, like, it was more like scoffing kind of laughing, like, oh, geez, here we go again. Because, I mean, there have been movies and even TV shows that have used this type of premise before, but they found interesting ways to do it so it didn't feel, like, tedious. But unfortunately, though, Nyholm just didn't really make it quite work here. But like I said, there are interesting elements to it. Like the three sort of villains at the center of the film are actually genuinely creepy and bizarre. And of course, the actors playing Tobias and Ellen, who unfortunately I don't know their names of at the moment, were actually pretty solid as well. And also, but for me, what made this film really interesting, like it is an interesting film as a whole. There are some really interesting elements to it. But one aspect I thought worked really well, and for me kind of saved the film for me, was these kind of shadow puppet sequences. And because there are two moments during the film where I guess where we have these sequences with shadow puppets. And I guess the puppets are meant to kind of, like what happens in these sequences are meant to be sort of symbolic of what's happening in the film. And they're actually really beautifully done. And the score for these film in these sections is actually quite moving and beautiful. But they do feel out of tone for the rest of the film. And I guess it's kind of, but at the same time, it does make the film kind of unique. Like I said, the film itself doesn't work entirely, which is a shame because there are interesting elements, but unfortunately, Nyholm sort of takes a really poor approach to how he handles, you know, the story and also the premise. But it's still a unique and interesting film. Like, I don't think it's definitely not a good film at all, but it's an interesting one. And I don't feel like it really sort of wraps itself quite well in the end, thematically or on either, also on a character or story front as well. But that being said, it's interesting, but it doesn't quite live up to the premise as it could have. But the shadow puppet sequences were pretty cool, I'll say that. So if I had to give Coco D. Coco Da a rating, I'd give it a solid 2 out of 5. Now moving on to film number 3, which of course is another horror film, but this one is one of my most anticipated for the festival, which was The Lodge, which is the latest film from Veronica Franz and Serafin Fiala, who of course were the filmmakers behind Goodnight Mommy, and this film is actually their English language debut. And the plot summary for this film is as follows. A snowstorm has trapped Grace, Riley Keough, in an isolated alpine lodge with her boyfriend Richard Artemidge's, two kids, Aiden and Mia. As the atmosphere is chilly, as Aiden and Mia refuse to replace their beloved mother Laura, Alicia Silverstone. More unnerving for Grace, the sole survivor in an evangelical cult, is the Catholic paraphernalia filling the lodge. As the temperatures drop and paranoia grows, is she right to suspect that the children of manipulating her? Or are malevolent spirits haunting the lodge? Or perhaps the never-exorcised demons of Grace's childhood are being unleashed to harrowing effect? Now, I first became aware of The Lodge when the film played at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year. And what made me really interested in checking out was for two reasons. Number one, a lot of comparisons to Hereditary, which was my number one film of 2018. And of course, the film's directors, Severin Fiala and Veronica Franz, who of course directed Goodnight Mommy, which was a film I saw a couple years back at MIFF, and I was a big fan of that film. And it made me sort of anxious to see what they were going to do next. And they did direct a segment for an anthology horror film that I saw last year at MIFF called The Field Guide to Evil. And their segment was actually the best segment in that whole anthology film. But The Lodge is their sort of feature-length follow-up to Goodnight Mommy. And the fact that it's also their first English language film made me even more intrigued. And now having seen the film for myself, I'm kind of mixed on it. But at the same time, though, it is an interesting film. But one thing I do know for sure, this is a film, once it gets released, it is going to have a massive polarizing reaction from audiences. Because some of the friends who I saw the film with, and as well as reading some of the reactions to it afterwards, were very right down the middle. And people either really liked it, or they absolutely hated it. And I can definitely see on both ends why people felt either way, particularly those who absolutely hated it. But for me personally, I dug it. Like, I think it's not as great as it could have been, and I feel like the main problem with the film is the script. And I could definitely see what Severin Fiala and also and Veronica Ferrans, who co-wrote the script with Sergio Cassi, were trying to do with the story. But I feel like I wish there was more to it. Like, it feels like I don't want to say too much more because I feel like if I talk about the reasons why some aspects of the story didn't work for me would go into spoiler territory, so I won't go into that. But I kind of feel like the script could have done a little bit more with its story. And it feels like they had some interesting ideas, but I guess they were kind of wanted to hold back and make the film a bit more ambiguous, or even sort of leave it on a note where we sort of question what's going on and leave sort of so to make it a bit more thought-provoking. So once the film ends, we have our own thoughts and ideas and interpretations of what the story is trying to say or do. Not to say that the film's like a mind fuck or anything like that, but I feel like the story itself could have been worked on a little bit more. Or so that it would, that way it would have been a much more fulfilling experience for me as a viewer. But that being said, though, there are a lot of really good qualities in this film. And one of which being that I think visually the film looks gorgeous. I love the atmosphere of this film. It is full of dread from beginning to end. And I could definitely see the comparisons to Hereditary because there are definitely some visual cues that did remind me of that film, and particularly just like Hereditary, dollhouses are used a lot in this film, and I'm still trying to figure out the reason why they used it that way. But at the same time, and I was talking to a few friends about this afterwards, the film that kind of reminded me more of than, say, Hereditary was It Comes at Night. And that's a film, again, like who I know a lot of people have very mixed opinions on, but I really like that movie a lot, and I think I like that movie more than The Lodge. But I could definitely see the comparisons there because the tone of that film reminded me of this one. And interesting enough, Riley Keough was in both films too. But yeah, I think directing wise, I think Fiala and Franz did a really solid job with their handling their first English language film, and they get really strong performances from their cast. Riley Keough was really good in the film, and also the two kids, one of which is played by Jaden Martell, who of course played the role of Bill Denbrough in It Chapter One. He's really good as well, and he has good rapport with his on-screen sister. But they're also really interesting characters as well. And also Richard Armitage, who of course played Thorin in the Hobbit films, he's solid as well. I kind of wish there was a bit more of him in the film, to be honest. And also, Alicia Silverstone is in the film as well with a small role. And it's kind of funny that I'm kind of seeing Alicia Silverstone pop up in films over the last few years. I think, like, she's been in a lot of things I've seen, but probably most notable is, like, The Killing of a Sacred Deer. Like, she was in that film as well in an equally small role, but she pops up, and then she again shows up in this film. So it's kind of cool to see Alicia Silverstone making a bit of a comeback as well. So, and being a big Clueless fan that I am, that's made me a bit giddy. But that being said, though, like, I think visually the film looks great. It's well directed. It's got some solid performances. The score is really good. And there are definitely some interesting aspects to it. I feel like some of the people I've talked to in the film afterwards have a very sort of black and white on the film, at least what they felt like the film was trying to say and present. But I feel like the film has a lot of interesting elements to it that is definitely makes it worth discussing and makes it a much more interesting film. But I kind of wish that, like I said, the script did a little bit more with that story and kind of went further with the sort of with elements of the plot than the themes in there, because it feels, I don't want to use the word half-baked, but it feels like half a film. And there are definitely interesting aspects, and there'll definitely be some elements to it that I think will rub people the wrong way and maybe even find a little problematic as well. Again, I can't say why because that'll go in the spoiler territory, but I'll be interested to hear what everyone thinks of this film when it comes out, because I feel like more people will probably hate it than anything else, but I feel like this film is a lot more interesting than most will probably give it credit for. Like, it's no Hereditary, because Hereditary for me is an absolute masterpiece. This film, I don't know if this one was made in to capitalize on Hereditary, because they kind of had similar elements, or they were being shot at the same time or whatnot, but I can definitely see the comparisons there. But I feel if the film kind of feels more like Hereditary meets It Comes at Night, but with a totally unique story of its own. But yeah, I just feel like the script is a little bit underdeveloped, but for what it is, I still dug it, and I'm interested to check it out again for sure at some point. It's a very subtle film as well, but it's very atmospheric, very creepy at times, but it's interesting. Could have been great, but it's still interesting nonetheless. So if I had to give The Lodge a rating, I give it a solid 3 out of 5. Now, moving on to my fourth and final film for this episode, which is the drama Swallow. And the plot summary for this film is as follows. Hunter, Haley Bennett, goes about her days alone, preparing dinner for her husband and tending for their impeccable home. But beneath Hunter's flawlessly coveted exterior roils a quiet rage. After she finds out she's pregnant, it emerges, a compulsive eating disorder where she swallows inedible objects. It starts with a marble and escalates from there. Just like Coco D. Coco Da, I had never heard of Swallow until I actually read it in the Myth Program Guide. And when I read the synopsis, I found it really interesting. It definitely was on my mind for quite a while, and I kept going back and forth whether to include it or not. And for a little bit, I didn't once. But then about probably a few days before the festival, I decided to move a few things around, and I thought, you know what? I'll give this film a chance. I wasn't sure what to expect with Swallow, because the premise... I guess my image of how the film's was going to deal with this very bizarre premise, I just assumed it was going to take more of an exploitation kind of approach and kind of use, you know, the fact that there's a character who eats inedible objects like marbles, pins, and other stuff. Things that people in real life shouldn't be eating because it'll damage, you know, our insides, would go from more of a shock value type of thing. And I guess that's probably why I was hesitant to put it on the list, because I kind of assumed that the film was going to do that. But interesting enough, the film's writer-director, Carlo Mirabella Davis, takes that premise, but does something really interesting with it, because he uses the premise to kind of explore interesting themes and ideas. And I could explain what those are, but at the same time, that'll go into spoiler territory, so I won't say what they are. But using that sort of compulsive eating disorder, where the character of Hunter, like I said, eats like inedible objects, like it starts off, like we sort of see her do that throughout the first half of the film. But as the film progresses, we kind of find out and learn more the reasons why she's doing it. And that for me is where the film takes a very interesting turn. And luckily, Mirabella Davis doesn't use this disorder as shock value, which could have easily been done in another filmmaker's hands. But Mirabella Davis just, like I said, uses that as the starting off point to tackle interesting themes. And he does it, and Mirabella Davis does it really well too. Like, it's a really compelling, engaging film that definitely is definitely a drama, but it definitely has some satirical elements to it, particularly sort of when it delves into sort of the lifestyles of the rich, and particularly again how men can be complete trash as well. And but at the heart of it though is the character of Hunter, played beautifully by Haley Bennett. Haley Bennett's one of those actors who I've been following for years now. Like, I can't remember the exact first thing I ever saw her in, but she was appearing in a lot of films that I've been seeing over the last few years. But in supporting roles. And this is one of her first big major film roles. I think the last, I know she's had a couple other lead roles prior to this one, particularly the horror film Christie. But this is definitely one I feel like once people kind of see her performance in this film, she's definitely going to blow up. Like, and she's going to get bigger and major roles as well, because she is fantastic in this film. And it's a terrific performance, a compelling one. And also once the film goes into the third act, an incredibly moving one as well. And we're taken in by her character story and what she's going through. And also the scenes where she eats random objects. Like I said, it isn't done for exploitive reasons, but it does take a sort of a hard-hitting look at that. And I will admit, there's a scene where you kind of, like, she eats one of the objects, and then once the objects escape her body, she puts them on her table. And I'm looking, and this is over the passage of time, and we see all these little objects, and I'm thinking, how on earth did she eat some of these things? I couldn't even imagine anyone eating, I won't say what the objects are, so I'll leave that as a surprise. Like, how could someone eat objects like that? And because these things, I'm just looking at them, like, some of them have got sharp bits, some of them are weird looking, and like, I don't know how it's even possible. But the film only really sort of delves into that aspect for only the first half. But then, of course, it takes a bit of a shift with its plot from there. And I just found this film just very moving and very riveting. And I have to say, without a doubt, one of the biggest surprises I saw at MIFF this year. I'm going to be championing this film. Like, it's a film that I think everyone should check out. It's a great little movie that's got a great premise that uses it to tackle very interesting and socially relevant themes as well. So definitely, I know this film's only doing the festival circuit at the moment. I think it might not even be released in cinemas until next year. But once it does, definitely go check it out. It is worth it. It is a great little movie that's interesting, compelling, but has a fantastic performance from Hayley Bennett at the center of it. And she's wonderful. And I hope this film, like, more people see this film, see her performance, and put her even in more stuff, because she definitely has the chops for sure. And of course, Carlo Mirabella Davis is a filmmaker to watch as well. And I'm very curious to see what Mirabella Davis does next for sure. So if I had to give Swallow a rating, I give this one 4 out of 5. I really dug this one a lot. And it's definitely, without a doubt, one of my personal favorite surprises of MIFF this year. So, yep. That's the end of this fifth edition of my 2019 Melbourne International Film Festival audio reviews. I hope you guys all enjoyed it. And keep a lookout very soon for my sixth edition, in which I'll be reviewing the films The Art of Self-Defense, First Love, Deerskin, and The Day Shall Come. So keep a lookout for that, and I'll see you guys all later. See you, everyone. Bye.